Email to Odessa is by my dear friend Dennis Tabensky, who is also the publisher of New Music Shelf. And he had asked me to curate the anthology of songs for of new songs for soprano in 2016. And so we had this previous association, and when I had the 40 at 40 idea, he's such an advocate for composers. So I took him out to lunch and I was like, hey, I just have this idea. I'm worried that in some way, like, composers aren't gonna like it. And I just wanna, like, kinda like litmus test. Like, do you think this is a good idea? Or will somehow it'll be stepping on someone's toes and they won't like it? And he thought it was a great idea and, you know, offered to help me with the anthology to make sure that the songs live on beyond me. So he's someone who has been, you know, a good sounding board for me in my kind of creative, thought processes. And like, I'll come to him, we'll have lunch, and I'll have some wild idea, and he'll be like, I don't know, Laura, that sounds so he's like a person I can, like, throw crazy ideas at, get some tempering, get some honesty, and then, like, you know, come out with a better formed solid thought. So I appreciate him so much. But he is also a composer, and so obviously I asked him to write a song for the project, and he wrote this song and dedicated it to his parents. And it's called Email to Odessa, and so people think it's about Odessa, Ukraine, but it's actually about Odessa, Texas. And it's just a very simple sentiment that, like, when someone loves you, they want to know how you are. So they are going to, like, read the weather in the town that you live in to know what kind of day you're having. And that's that, you know, love, that kind of attention is what real love is. And it's an absolutely beautiful little song.
That's soprano Laura Strickling talking about the piece I opened the program with today, Email to Odessa by Dennis Tobinski, written for Laura as part of her project 40 at 40. Welcome to Relevant Tones. I'm Seth Bosted. I'm going to be talking to Laura on the program about this really cool project. The first album is out. There's another album forthcoming. So the first album has 20 songs, and the second one will have, you guessed it, 20 as well. 40 songs commissioned by Laura, originally for her 40th birthday. So I'll be talking with her about that great project. And I want to mention that the composers I'll be featuring on the program today include Juhi Bansal, H. Leslie Adams, Reynaldo Moya, Bess McCrary, Lori Laitman, James Primosh, Dennis Tobinski, and Ed Wendells. Just in case I don't have time on the program to say that, want to make sure I mention up front whose music we'll be listening to and talking about. All of these songs were written for the 40 at 40 project, and the book of these songs has been published as well. And we'll hear Laura talk more about that. So off to the interview now with Laura. I asked her how she got started on her very interesting path in music.
So my father was a minister. I have that, like, very cliche story of, like, growing up singing in church. I mean, certainly where I got my confidence to sing in front of people, because it's one of those things that, you know, most people are afraid of. It's like the number one fear is being in front of people, speaking, whatever. And so I got a lot of experience doing that young, and so I think that helped me a lot. And I did take piano lessons, but I do not consider myself any kind of pianist. I actually started percussion when I was 11, and I was pretty serious about that. Like, that I took lessons with a woman who was a percussionist, I believe, in the Arizona Symphony, Phoenix Symphony. But, you know, just, like, really, you know, like, that was my focus. I had a drum set, I had a glockenspiel, I had, you know, all of the percussion instruments, and that was my focus until college. I took my first voice lesson. I had a mentor in who was my choir teacher in high school, who was always like, you need to stop banging those drums and be a singer. And he was just adamant about it. And I was like, but I love the drums. And he was just adamant that I needed to be a singer. And I went to college and decided to be a voice major instead of a percussion major. And that's when I had my first, like, real voice lesson. And once I got the bug, it just didn't go away. And I've walked away several times. I did my undergrad and my graduate studies in vocal performance, and then I didn't sing for 5 years because I wasn't sure how to become a singer. I wasn't sure, you know, there's no kind of textbook on here's what you do after you graduate school. So I was the accreditation specialist for the National Office for Arts Accreditation for 2 years, and then we lived in Morocco for a year. My husband got a grant to study Arabic And so I was like, I'm gonna do that. That sounds like fun. I'm not missing that. So we moved to Morocco and we both studied Arabic for the year at the Arabic Language Institute of Fez. And then we came back from Morocco and I could have gone back to the National Association of Schools of Music, but I just it didn't feel like the right path for me. And I had to kind of decide what I was gonna be when I was when I grew up. And at that point I was 29 years old. So I was like, my husband said, "Well, you should just take a voice lesson because it'll make you happy." And I was like, "But I, you know, I mean, but I'm not gonna be a singer because that ship has sailed." And I found this amazing teacher in Washington, D.C. named Elizabeth Daniels, and she's independent teacher in Silver Spring, Maryland. And she basically, you know, I had all these bad technical habits when I left graduate school, and because I had had all this time between graduate school and coming back to singing, all of those habits were I was able to overcome them and rebuild from scratch. And my teacher encouraged me to enter competitions because auditions, I don't know if you know this, Seth, for singers, you have to send letters of recommendation and an application and an application fee, and they will cash your check, but they don't have to give you an audition. And since I had so much time off, I couldn't find anybody to recommend me. So I couldn't get an audition to save my life, but the competitions would cash my check and let me sing. So I just did a ton of competitions, and then just you start to people start to know who you are based on the competition circuit. I got some money, I got some gigs from the competition wins, and I was heard by the head of Songfest, which is a summer program that focuses on art song, and she invited me to come out to Songfest when I think I was 30, and that kind of snowballed. So I went the next summer, I went back to Songfest and then to the Ravinia Festival, and then I went to Tanglewood 2 years in a row, and then kind of had enough momentum at that point and enough confidence and enough repertoire that I just decided I was in it to win it. And around that time my husband moved to Afghanistan to start a law school. So I was flying back and forth between Kabul and New York and DC. It was kind of like this very scattered existence for 3 years. And then my husband left Afghanistan after 3 years and moved to the Virgin Islands. So we ended up living in the Virgin Islands for 9 years, and now we have made our way back to our childhood home in Chicago after 20 years away. But it's been quite the ride, and somehow, some way, because I'm not even sure I could tell you, I'm still a singer.
Wow. I'm glad I asked that question, because I don't always, especially with composers, you don't really ask a composer, how'd you become a composer? Because it's often the same kind of story. It's like, I was good at music and we had resources and I went to the right schools and everything worked out, So with you, it's like, that's not a boring story. That's an awesome story. Wow. Amazing. And living all over the world as well.
Well, you know, they always, when I was in grad school, and the reason that I kind of thought like I don't get to be a singer now is because they're like, you know, if you don't, you can't have kids. You can't, you really, oh, whatever. First it starts with you can't get married. So everyone takes off their wedding rings for auditions because, oh God, you know, don't want anyone to know I'm married. And then it's, you know, don't have kids because you won't have, no one will think you're dedicated enough or you'll be too busy. And so don't have kids. And of course you have to live in New York. At least back then it was, you had to live in New York if you were going to do it. And you know, and you can't be over 30, like as a soprano, like you can't be over 30, and also you need to be like supermodel beautiful thin, and I'm like literally none of those things. I like had a baby at 35, and like God, I thought it was gonna ruin my career, but like everything, you know, since I got a manager when she was a year old, I got a Grammy nomination when she was I think 4, and then I got another one when she was 6. Like I don't know, for all the people out there who are told exactly what they have to do to have career and think if they veer off that path and do anything that they might want to do with their lives, God forbid, outside of being a singer, I'm here to tell you, like, your art has to fit into your life, because that's the way to live a life.
So, where are things right now? You're halfway through, three quarters through, one
I
quarter.
mean, I don't think there is a through is how it has developed. It's I think what I, you know, at the beginning it was like I'm gonna commission 40 songs from 40 composers for my 40th birthday, have a concert on the my 40th birthday and present them. And then, you know, the pandemic intervened and, you know, everything, all plans went out the window, and it's just kind of developed into this leviathan of creative collaboration and just trying to do the best I can by my fellow musicians and do what I can to help the people who are writing songs and creating new songs. Because, you know, when I did interviews for both of my Grammy nominations, people would say, "Oh, well, you know, art song is a dying art." And I'd be like, "Hey, bud, I just got a Grammy nomination for an album of art songs. So it seems to me like it's alive and well." And so, you know, I believe that with all my heart. So I want to be part of making sure that is the case, and just supporting the people who create it and the people who present it. So that's kind of, it's like basically anything I can do to do that, to for that North Star goal, to reach that North Star goal. It feels like a good thing. And of course, like, I'm always limited by money. I never I've like never gotten any grants, so it's like it all comes out of either my family budget or my singing revenue. So I got one grant, that's not true. I got one grant from New Music USA for $3,000, but everything else has been all me. So I'm only limited by my pocket book.
I love when you say family budget. I'm like, the composers are taking money away from Laura's kids here, you know?
I mean, I'm offering it. It's not like they're like dragging it out of me.
You know, when I was at WFMT, there was very much a mantra that art song was something you really shouldn't put on the radio, that people had a hard time with it. And I, you know, it's an interesting thing because on the other hand, you know, you have the Schubert songs, and just to name some of the giants of the, you know, the catalog. I mean, it's always like, well, if you play Winterreise, you're telling me people are going to turn off. Like, I find that hard to believe, you know. So, like, I wonder where that perception comes from, that art song is difficult for people.
I think it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you don't educate people and expose them to an art form, if you actively deny them access, they're going to think they don't like it. So, you know, you're right. I have also heard that there was kind of this edict to public and classical radio stations in like the mid-20th century that patrons don't want to hear words, singers at all, but music with words. And so they just didn't play it. And so then people weren't exposed, and they thought it was an antiquated thing. And you know, again, self-fulfilling prophecy. So I've been really heartened to see a lot of radio stations starting to pick up more. I'll get you know, emails and text messages from people in whatever city they live in saying they just heard of something off of one of my albums on the radio station. Oliver Camacho at WFMT is their music director, and he has done great things for music for The Voice at WFMT. He started listening to singers, where he invites singers to come on and talk about their favorite things that are being recorded for The Voice, and then plays bits of it. And you know, things like that, I think, is helping kind of turn the tide. But I think we can always do more.
What you eat, but what you order, and I'm predictable.
That was Thanks a Latte by Lori Laitman. It's always fun when you have an art song that's funny. They're not so easy to do, you know. So I wanted to make sure we played that on the program today. And before that, we heard Peony by Ed Windels. You're listening to Relevant Tones. I'm Seth Bosted, and I'm talking to Laura Strickling about this album, 40 at 40. These are the first 20 songs of 40 commissioned by Laura Strickling as part of this really great project. Let's jump right back into that interview and hear some more of these great songs.
So Bess McCrary is a singer, songwriter, a good friend, a mom friend. We met through like a mommy group when we both had newborns. And I really wanted to bring my friends into this project. There were a couple composers I didn't know well, but I wanted people who I had like meaningful life connections with to be part of this project. And I said, hey, Bess, you know, I know you're not a classical composer and I'm a classical singer, but would you be interested in writing a song for my project? And she did want to write a song for my project. And she decided to write about how difficult it is to be the mom of a very small child and how it challenges your sense of identity. The words are, you know, they're kind of like sad, funny. This oat is mine. I won't share a bite. Your kid is always grasping for whatever it is you're eating. You'll never know pure magic me, the woman I was before you were born, basically. You won't know me because I'm covered in all these like goldfish and, you know, all these things. And it just, I don't think there's another song out there like it. And it's hard for me to sing. In fact, my pianist, you can ask him, it probably took maybe like 8 rehearsals before I didn't break into sobs. Not because I don't love being a mom. I do love being a mom. It's one of the best things that's ever happened to me, but it does challenge your sense of identity. It is hard, especially when your child is very, very young. And so when I read these words, I just related to them so very deeply. I could barely sing them and they're not objectively sad, but it was just, I literally would gag. And I've only actually performed it once in concert because I'm not sure I can without breaking into tears. So it's one of those songs that like I absolutely love. And I actually think of all of the songs most frequently, this is probably number 2 in where people ask me where they can get the score for it, because so many people who are moms relate to this the words of this song so very deeply.
Share a bite. In fact, I'll fight you.
Not Quite Stars is I love all of the songs equally, all of my children equally, but Not Quite Stars has a really special place for me because Juhi reached out to me after hearing my CD Confessions, and she just said, "Hey, I'm a composer. I'd be interested in you singing my stuff." And I get an email like that probably every day of the week. But I did have time that day, and I went and listened to her stuff, and I just thought she had a really unique, compelling voice. And at that point, I was like, "Oh, I have no money. I'm so sorry. I wish I could just commission you today, but I have no money." And that same day, a poet that I know, who lived on the island that I lived on in St. Thomas, her name is Julie Baber. She used to be an actor. I guess you're once an actor, always an actor, but she's an actor. And she also is a poet. And she, I had just announced the 40 at 40 project publicly and what I was doing. And she wrote me and said, "Hey, I really want to be in, this is such a cool project. I want to be involved. Do you think you could get anyone to set one of my poems?" And I said, "Well, it's a special chemistry. It's like dating, right? A composer has to kind of respond to the words. I can't force it." So I said, I would gladly add your poetry to the kind of folder of poetry I have to consider, but I can't promise anything." And she said, "Well, if anybody picks one of my poems, I'll pay the commission fee." And I was like, "Oh my God," because I had just told Juhi that I really wanted to work with her, but I couldn't because I didn't have any money. So I said, "Juhi, if no pressure, but do you like either of these poems?" And she was like, "I love this one. This one's really great. I really want to do this." And I was like, "It is your lucky day, friend." So it was kind of like this, it was meant to be like bringing my island friend together with this composer who lives a very international life but is based in California and actually lost her home in the Pasadena fires earlier this year. Because we've become great friends since that first reach out. We have Zooms, and I've performed a lot of her works at this point. And she and this poet have collaborated beyond the 40 at 40 project. They've done other things together. And so, and again, coming back to why this project matters to me, it's just like this, all the bringing all of the people in my life who have something to say and have art to make, bringing them together and bringing these collaborations together is just makes it so much more meaningful to me. It just makes it everything worthwhile. And so, not quite stars, the text is, we who are not yet ashes, we who are still alive on this our earth, we're not yet stars. So what we do with our time matters. Reynaldo Moya is a composer that I have a long association with. We've been friends for a really long time. So he was obviously someone I was gonna ask to write a song for me. And this is the only song that is in Spanish. And I've never studied Spanish. And so it was, I had a lot of kind of, I was worried that I would not be able to do it justice. So I spent a lot of time with a language coach on this. But it's interesting because there's so many poems that, so with choosing a 40 at 40 song poem, sometimes I, said, here's stuff I'm interested in. Do you like any of these things? And sometimes the composer said, I have an idea and here's what I want to do. And this is one of those. And so I didn't know this poem, but I thought it was beautiful. So, I want to help composers bring what they want to bring to life. So I said, yes. And it's interesting because the words are all about like not appreciating the place that you are until after you've left. And it's specifically like I lived amongst them, but I never actually looked at the palm trees. And now I'm no longer with the palm trees, and I'll never see them again. And I like have been singing this song for years now, but it just smacked me in the face after I moved away from the island of St. Thomas that I'd been on for 9 years. And it was like, did I ever truly appreciate the palm trees? Like, again, a song that was written at a certain point in time that actually, in the fullness of time and in the way and in as my life has moved forward, has come to mean so much more to me than it did in the beginning. And I think that is, that's what makes art great. I also wanted to talk about Song of Solitude, which is H. Leslie Adams is an American composer who I have just admired for a very long time. I think he is kind of the master of melody. And I'd heard his things in recital and just thought, that guy gets it. And so when I was putting the 4040 project together, I'd never met him. He's the only composer that I'd never met. But I wrote him a letter, and because he doesn't email, so I wrote him a letter just saying, here's why I want you to write a song for me. Here's why I appreciate the art that you make. Would you consider it? And he said, yeah, I would love to. So, and I was just like, couldn't believe, this like, I thought he'd say no, but he said yes. And then a few months later, his publisher came back to me and said he's not feeling very well, and he is an opera in progress, and he really wants to focus on that. He's wondering if he has this song that was never premiered that he started writing in 1999, and he's wondering if he edited it and updated it, if you'd be willing to premiere it and use it for 40 of 40. And I looked at the text, and it's literally like an aria for the pandemic. The words are timeless. Like it doesn't, you don't listen to it and think, oh, this is a pandemic song, but it is perfect for the pandemic. It's all about the like kind of the very big feelings you have when you are alone. And I thought this song was sitting in that drawer waiting for this very moment in history because it needs to be heard now. So it was, there was an easy yes. And so that's how the song got into the project. And then last year, he and I, became pen pals and Christmas notes sent back and forth. And then this last year, he did die. I think he was 90. How old was he? 96, I think. But he lived a very long, very musical life, and he did pass away recently. So I always say that we're doing these songs. No one who makes such beautiful things ever truly dies because we get to live in their art. Wind Carry Me is by Jim Primosh. He was someone that I met when I lived in New York. He is an amazing composer, and kind of was, an amazing educator too. And when I conceived of the project, this was right at the beginning of the pa pandemic. He and I were emailing back and forth. He asked if he could set this poem that he loved, and I loved it too, so I said yes. And then we were emailing back and forth. He sent me the draft. I loved it. He sent me the final. I sent him the contract, and I didn't hear back. And it turned out that he had died of cancer. And he didn't say, at one point when we were emailing, he said, I'm not feeling well. I've been kind of ill, but he didn't let on how ill he was. And it just like completely, surprised me. And so this is again one of those songs where like, he lives on in his beautiful art. And if you read the words of the song, it's an eerie song to have as your last song because it's all about this kind of like higher purpose and being carried forth. And I wonder if that, he didn't say that, but I wonder if he was like, I want these to be the last words that I set to song. And so it's a really special song to me.
Start.
That's all the time we have on the program today. Thanks so much to Laura Strickling for being on the program, for commissioning this really fabulous work. If you're a singer, you want to sing any of this stuff, go to the New Music Shelf and check out the anthology, because these songs are now published. And if you're just a music lover and you want to hear the rest of the songs, go to Spotify or Apple or wherever you hear your music and look up 40 at 40 by Laura Strickling. Relevant Tones is a production of Access Contemporary Music, a nonprofit organization with the mission of providing equitable access to the transformative power of music making. For more information, go to acmusic.org. For Relevant Tones, I'm Seth Bosted. Thanks so much for listening.